All right, welcome in to Big Noon Sports. Let's go live to the Mel Moore Athletic Facility. Nick Saban is at the podium.
Obviously has had a really good season. The players, you know, play hard to compete well. Rusty Wright has done, you know, a really good job there. I think they're like second in their league, 7-3, only lost two games in their league. So one of the most productive offensive teams. They've got a good quarterback. They've got good receivers. They run the ball with good balance. They're really well coached, you know, defensively. This guy, Jay Pearson, is, you know, got lots of sacks and lots of tackles for losses, and these guys play hard. And like always, you know, this is a great opportunity for these guys to play, you know, in a game that they probably dream about. For our team, this is either a game that you focus on correctly, you go out and practice and prepare correctly, and you build on, you know, the momentum that you've improved with over the last weeks. And that helps you get better for what's coming up in the future. So if you don't do that, you don't have a good showing. You sort of lose your rhythm. And, you know, rhythm is a little bit like momentum. You know, sometimes you lose momentum in the game, it's hard to get it back. So you got to always play the next play and keep answering the bell. And, you know, that's really kind of how we need to approach, you know, this game in terms of, you know, what our focus is and how we want to continue to improve as a team. If you're going to peak at the right time, you can't have peaks and valleys. You got to keep going in the right direction. And that's what we want to get our players to focus on this week in practice in preparation for this game.
Yeah, Terrion mentioned that every team could use a Miss Terry, and she's helped with motivating and just staying locked in. I mean, how does she help the team during the season in terms of what she does to motivate players?
Well, you know, her and Terrion are really kind of buddies. So I know she sort of texts with him and all that, and, you know, I kind of get on him. So it's just like kind of raising your children, you know. I'm the guy that's always trying to get them to do right, and she's the mama who's always trying to make them happy. So that's the way it's been for a long time.
Hey, Coach, a guy like Chris Braswell seemed to steadily improve over the course of his career. Where have you seen him grow the most since he got on campus?
You know, Braz is a really good competitor, hard worker, really works hard in practice to get it right. I think a lot of guys that play outside backer for us, you know, when they come here, they don't have a lot of background and experience in standing up and playing. You know, a lot of them play with their hand in the dirt, you know, and high school. So the whole idea of standing up and playing, dropping some, how do you rush off the edge, you know, when you're standing up rather than down in a three-point stance. So, and I also think that opens up a whole panorama of knowledge of the game, you know, coverages and things like that. So, and I would say that Braz has certainly improved physically because of how committed he is to being a good player. But I think from a mental standpoint, that's where he's really sort of has a much, much better understanding of all the things you need to do to play that position.
Middle of Matt.
After looking at the tape, what do you think of how your offensive line played against Kentucky?
They played really well. You know, I think Kentucky's big up front. We talked about trying to be the most physical team. I think they did a good job of that. I think we ran the ball better in the second half than in the first. And some of that was just how were they playing. But I was really pleased, especially in the second half, with how we controlled the line of scrimmage. I think for the most part, the pass protection was a little better. And we want to continue to improve in all those areas.
Hey, Coach, can you talk about the gauntlet of this SEC schedule? You guys are 7-0 up to this point, and then kind of a follow-up. How have you seen this team transform from week two up to this point in time?
Yeah, well, you know, we talked about a lot how this team has been able to show great resiliency and perseverance to, you know, really stick with it. They want to be good, so they want to be coached. They've stayed focused on what we need to do to continue to get better, and I think by doing that, the confidence has built, the respect and trust has built, which helps confidence. And I think, you know, we got a lot of guys that are playing really good football now. So, and we had a lot of guys that really stepped up in this last game and played well, like a receiver. I mean, we had two receivers out. These guys played really, really well. I mean, the receiver group. In fact, I think you probably got that we took the whole group and said, you guys are the players of the game. You know, we had a couple guys that had to step up on defense with some starters missing. So, but it just seems like whether it's been on special teams or however it's been, you know, every guy's kind of all in to try and do what they can do to help the team. And the leadership has been good, and the transformation has shown in terms of, you know, how we've been able to execute and play week in and week out.
No problem, Chase.
You mentioned on your radio show a couple weeks ago that Braswell is a good leader in his own quiet way. Besides Chris, who are a couple of guys who lead well by example but maybe aren't necessarily vocal about it?
Right. Tim Keenan's a good leader up front. I think, you know, Devontae Lawson is a really good leader at linebacker. Dallas is a good leader at outside backer. Malachi's a good leader, you know, in the secondary. So, you know, we have some guys at each position that, you know, set a pretty good example in terms of how you need to prepare for a game, how you need to try to practice. And, you know, Braz is one of those guys as well. And he's on the leadership because of the example that he sets and how he goes about what he does.
Katie on the left. Oh, you're good? Okay. Tony right there. Do you have one? You did. Okay. Ryan. I thought they told me you had one.
Coach, with Senior Day this week, what does it say in the world of the transfer portal and NIL, and especially a program like Alabama, if you don't play maybe your freshman year, a lot of guys want to leave? I'm not just talking about your program, but a lot of programs. What does it say about, like, Chris Braswell or Roy Dell that stuck through and really built value for themselves for the next level?
Well, I think there's a lot of examples of guys that have done that probably in a lot of programs, but, you know, I'm just here to speak about our program. But, you know, a guy like Mac Jones who – I didn't play until his fourth year and played very well when he did and developed. So I think it speaks volumes of their commitment to the program and seeing that if they do the right things, they're going to have success. We've had guys here that, you know, do very well in the pros, even though in the NFL, even though they've had maybe not a significant role their entire career here, but played well at some point in time. And that gave them an opportunity. I think that, you know, one of the big things that we try to get guys to understand is we have good players on our team, so you're going to have a better chance to develop because the competition in practice is actually going to be beneficial to your development. And I think that if guys can stay focused on long term in terms of what they're trying to develop and improve, you know, we've had all these freshmen who want to play as freshmen. And we've had, I don't know, you can count them up. How many guys have gone out early for the draft? So if it's 45 guys, I don't know if that's the right number or not. I've had 32 phone calls times 45, whatever that number is, in the thousands, right? I've never been asked once how much a guy played as a freshman. Never. Not once. Everybody wants to know, what did you develop into? But yet, the whole mindset is, if I don't play right away, you know, but that expectation gets created by a lot of external factors too. Not to put any of the blame on you all or anybody that says a guy's a five-star and he should make this immediate impact and all this stuff. So that becomes the expectation. So when it doesn't happen, guys frustrated. I get that. I understand that. You know, we got to try to get guys to be able to stay focused on what they have to do to develop as players, make improvement so that when they do play, they create value for themselves rather than worrying about just playing. But if you go out there and you don't play well, what kind of value are you creating for yourself? And what kind of confidence are you building? So all these things are things that we really try to emphasize with our young players. And the guys that buy into that, they end up doing pretty well.
Chef, you're with my name.
you competed against both Jimbo and Zach Arnett this year, as well as your reaction to the news of their firings.
I'm
Mississippi State's coach in Texas A&M reaction to those guys getting let go.
I don't ever like to see anybody get let go, whatever we want to call it, in this business. I know how hard everybody works. I know how difficult it is to sort of build, you know, a program, to get players to compete at a high level on a consistent basis, and just have a lot of respect for people who really work hard to try to change the lives of, you know, the guys that they're coaching, make them better people, help them do the right things in terms of getting an education as well as trying to develop them on the football field. But, you know, we are in a business that you get evaluated based on outcomes and your performance, and I hate to see anybody have to go through this. I've been fired before. It's no fun. It's no fun for your family. But I'm sure that both those guys have great reputations in terms of what they've been able to accomplish over the course of their career, and I'm sure they'll have many more opportunities to be successful in the future.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, thank you.
His Monday morning news conference, and he is away from the podium, and he's getting ready to coach him up for UTC. Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, Big Noon Sports. We'll be back. Talk about, well, Jimbo Fisher, Alabama. A lot on our plate here at lunch today.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Very pleasant afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, the high at 70. Tonight, increasingly cloudy, the low 49. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, the better chance of rain will be south of here, the high 65. Wednesday, cloudy and cool, periods of rain, the high 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3320 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Hey, it's Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, and Noah is at the controls. We appreciate you folks dialing us in as we will talk about what Nick Saban just communicated to us. Also, Alabama's Saturday victory over Kentucky, pretty convincing if you ask me, 49-21. We'll roll it fantastic again as Alabama just continues to get better every week. And then you got Jimbo Fisher getting fired yesterday. Zach Arnett is gone, and Andy Avalos out at Boise is gone as well. But first, let's just recap Saturday afternoon as Alabama looked pretty darn good, beating Kentucky 49-21.
Yeah, Jalen Milroe just played, I think, his best game of the season and really just showed how much he has progressed just in the last 2 weeks. I mean, if you total his combined efforts against LSU and Kentucky, he's accounted for 644 yards of offense, 10 touchdowns, including six in Saturday's rout of Kentucky. And that tied for the second most in Crimson Tide history, which is pretty amazing. And, you know, he's getting better protection up front. The line, which entered the game surrendering a league-high 37 sacks, didn't give up a single sack the entire game. First time that's happened all season. And this is a team that's peaking, Matt. And I mean, they're firing on all cylinders. And this is a good Kentucky team. And you got to remember, there's a reason that the line was at, like, you know, 11, 11 and a half, 10, somewhere in there. You know, people thought that this was going to be, you know, basically a two possession game. And Alabama just came out and played lights out. And again, it all started with Jalen. And, you know, he's showing improved accuracy. You know, it looked like, he suffered a leg injury early, but that didn't seem to affect him. And he's getting better and better. He started the past seven games for Alabama, won all seven. And now, looking toward the Iron Bowl, Auburn, you could argue is also one of the most improved teams in the country from the beginning of the year based on what they did on Saturday. And hey, it's the 10-year anniversary of the Kick Six. So, we'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But this is just, it's been a remarkable story of Alabama's season, going from what I really thought was the low point of the entire Nick Saban era. And that wasn't the loss against Texas. That was the performance against South Florida. From that point to where they are now is absolutely remarkable. And that has a lot of people, a lot of national writers, national commentators saying that this is perhaps Nick Saban's best coaching performance of his career. And should Nick Saban be considered for Coach of the Year? Which is, again, a stunning development for a man who just turned 72 years old. But, you know, he never stopped believing in this team. Not that you're ever going to find a coach that says, I don't believe in my team anymore. But Nick Saban just said, hey, you know, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep grinding. We're going to keep focusing on the process. And the thing is, he has so much experience with implementing his coaching philosophy with his kids, and he sees them improve, and he sees, you know, what's going on in practice, and he knows how to make the right adjustments. And I think figuring out against South Florida that Jalen Milroe needs to be on the field. All right. That was decision number one. And that changed everything. And it really has been, I think, for Nick Saban, I think he's enjoying it so much because he has seen the effects of his coaching, of not just him, but his entire staff, because of how much these kids have improved, Matt.
The improvements are in all areas. Now, certainly the most noticed, because it's the most noted player on the field, has been with Milroe. But I think a lot of that falls back on Tommy Rees and a development of an offense. ESPN did a nice job of showing a zone area downfield where his receivers would be crossing in and out of, to where Milroe wasn't having to be, he didn't have to have his head on a swivel. He could kind of check his reads in order as he looked upfield, which is, that, to me, first of all, nice job, ESPN. But that's a brilliant move to help out a guy that's struggling to check from two to three. That works. But I continue to be amazed, and a lot is being written about, and I'm not amazed, I just continue to be impressed with the overall improvement of Terrion Arnold. I mean, another pick, a forced fumble. I think he was second behind Caleb Downs in tackles, and he gets a lot of credit, so does Saban, to Miss Terry and their texts on Sunday afternoon, which, by the way, going back to the news conference, Nick Saban cracked himself up and laughed visibly until, you know, he laughed out loud for a second or two, and then finally another reporter asked a question. So it's all good for Alabama, and we'll see moving forward. I know you just don't overlook a team like University of Tennessee Chattanooga, but it's hard not to just go on down the road and think about what's going to happen at Auburn. By the way, I just got a text here a moment ago. It's been released nationally that the Alabama-Auburn game at Auburn will kick off at 2:30. So that's a pretty good time. I like these early kicks.
Same time as the kick six, I believe.
Well, if you keep bringing that up, we're going to lose listeners. Hey, we didn't get much to Jimbo Fisher. We're going to talk to Jeff Spiegel of ABC 3340 on the other side of the break about that. Alabama, Auburn, all things football here on Big Noon Sports.
During SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside, this is Big Noon Sports.
Really pretty Monday afternoon. Matt, Lars, Noah bringing you the show. And we heard from Nick Saban. Now we're going to hear from ABC 3340's Jeff Spiegel as we talk about all things. Good grief. You want me to just deal cards and flip one up and see what we talk about first? We
sure
can keep you for an hour and a half here. All right, I'm going to do it chronologically, dating back. Let's talk, right, first of all, just your thoughts on the way Alabama played at Lexington.
Well, I mean, I thought they went out there and took care of business. I thought it was just a very, you know, a very solid performance. I think Jalen Milroe has looked better and better each week. His sideline demeanor, the way he's leading this team, you know, the way he's played, I mean, you know, using the arm and the legs and accounting for six total touchdowns. I mean, every week this guy does something that just further convinces you that, you know, this guy is not only, you know, a great quarterback for the University of Alabama, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I mean, this guy's leaped up the charts in terms of Heisman odds. I mean, now we're looking at a guy who could get a trip to New York, you know, if things continue to play out the way it's been playing.
Matt, did you hear that? Trip to New York? That's an inside joke.
No, it's been on air. I
messed up to it. It's an on-air joke.
You know, a week ago, Lars was bringing up this Heisman possibility, and I chuckled. But then these polls come out, and he's 10th, and then he plays like another Heisman Trophy winner this past Saturday, and I wouldn't be surprised if Vegas had him at like 7 or 8. But anyway, Lars, continue. Fall on that as I justly should.
Okay, so I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer here, but why is it you think that the Alabama coaching staff didn't put their full faith in Jalen Milroe at the beginning of the season? Is it just that he's improved that much, or that they promised both Simpson and Buckner a chance to play?
Well, here's the story that I heard earlier in the year, is that, you know, Nick Saban's intention was to give all these guys an opportunity to show what they could do, you know, in the games. And Jalen Milroe had not taken hold of the quarterback position, you know, like they hoped that he would, you know, during preseason camp. And so, you know, they wanted to put Buckner and Simpson out there and give them an opportunity in the South Florida game, knowing that they could win that game. Therefore they did. They did do that, and they kind of won it ugly. But I also heard at the time, and I don't know how much credence you put into this, I put a lot of credence into it at the time, you know, that Milroe was, you know, not very happy, you know, with that decision, and that, you know, that created some friction, you know, between him and the coaching staff. Now, you know, having seen how things have transpired, you know, I don't know if I believe that story anymore or not, or maybe that makes it more believable, because his attitude maybe took a 180, you know, and went in the positive direction, because he was very, you know, he acted like a leader on the sidelines during that South Florida game, knowing that he wasn't going to play. And he was very encouraging, you know, to Simpson and Buckner. And then from that point on, you know, once he got his opportunity to start, I mean, he's taken full advantage of it and just kept the accelerator, you know, to the floor.
All that being said, golly, I hate to bring this up, but I need to. Is Alabama in trouble if they have to go to a backup?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought Ty Simpson was pretty solid you know, when he came in against Kentucky. You know, he led that touchdown drive. You know, he hasn't had many opportunities, but I thought the guy looked pretty good. Now, it was a Kentucky team that was defeated. You know, they were deflated by that point. But, you know, he had some good throws. He had a really good run for a first down, you know, down there inside the five. And I thought he looked good. Now, obviously, there's going to be a drop-off, you know, when you go from, you know, Milroe to your backup. I mean, they're supposed to be. That's why the backup is the backup. But I think Ty Simpson could handle himself, you know, pretty well if it came down to a situation where he had to be thrust into action.
Alabama's offensive line entered the game surrendering a SEC high 37 sacks, gave up zero against Kentucky. And there were many times this year when Matt and I were talking about, hey, who is the key player of this game going to be? And I would mention Caden Proctor, just because we knew how much talent he had coming out of a high school in Iowa. But, you know, he struggled early on. But now you're seeing the offensive line really progress. What do you think has just been the key? And what did you see on Saturday from the offensive line?
Well, I thought they played great. I mean, I thought as the game went on, they just got better and better. They, you know, they just kind of leaned on Kentucky and imposed their will, you know, against the Wildcats. And Caden Proctor's come on. And again, here's another situation where, you know what, the coaches know a lot more than the media does and the fans do. Because the most beat up person on this football team this year has been Caden Proctor. I mean, the media's been relentless. The fans have been relentless in terms of just, you know, attacking this guy's play. And, you know, and he did. I mean, he struggled. He struggled early, you know, but he was a freshman, you know, trying to learn, you know, this offensive line position. But he has got better and better and better because, you know, Saban and the coaches kind of stayed the course with this guy and, you know, knew that the only way he was really going to learn, you know, was through this on-the-job training. But the guy has gotten better as the year has gone on, which is, you know, what the coaches hoped, and it certainly has come to fruition.
I mean, his mental fortitude for an 18-year-old has been really impressive, don't you think?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I mean, look, no one likes to be, you know, have their reputation, you know, run down in whatever they do, you know, whether it's, you know, it's what we do, whether it's what, you know, and anybody does when it comes to doing their job. And Alabama football, if you're an Alabama football player, if you're a quarterback, you know, you're going to get a lot of criticism. But if you're a left tackle, I mean, you are going to just get ridiculously criticized, you know, because you're so visible out there. There's nowhere to hide. I mean, if someone gets sacked, you know, if Milroe gets sacked from the blind side, the first person they're going to look for is number 74. And so he's just been relentlessly criticized for his play. And it's just really good to see that he's come around and he's playing better.
I'll tell you, somebody else that deserves some credit, too, is Jaden Roberts, the way he has stepped in there. And, man, does he play at a totally 110% level. But I thought I would just throw that in there. Break some things down defensively. We've been throwing the laurels at Terrion Arnold, him and others on the defensive side of the football, and a huge mention to Kevin Steele because he's coaching him up now, too.
Well, that was a terrific pick, you know, that Arnold made against Kentucky. And I thought that Kevin Steele has, you know, put his stamp on this defense. I mean, the one thing that we were sold when Kevin Steele was named the defensive coordinator was that this defense was going to get its edge back. You know, it was going to get the physicality back. And, man, they were passing some licks in that Kentucky game. And, I mean, Devin Leary is spending, you know, a lot of time in the treatment room, you know, today and then tomorrow getting over the punishment that he took. And obviously, you know, you had the hit that Turner put on Daniels, which, you know, didn't so much change the course of the game. I mean, they were down by 14 at that point. Alabama's defense had already taken control of that game in the second half. But, you know, in that Tennessee and LSU game, you know, to give up 7 points in the second half, you know, combined to both of those teams, you know, certainly made a statement. And I just think they've played terrific all year. I thought at the midpoint of the year they were playing at a national championship level, and they really just haven't let up.
Many national writers and national commentators are saying that this is perhaps Nick Saban's finest coaching effort of his career at age 72. Do you buy that? And if so, why?
Well, I would totally agree with it because, you know, there were opportunities early in the year, you know, when people thought this team was toast. You know, after they lose at home to Texas, I mean, Alabama never loses at home, you know, and they lose at home to Texas. And then in South Florida, you know, they struggled because, you know, they were trying to figure out the quarterback thing. And then, you know, gosh, I mean, you know, people wanted to fire Tommy Reese, you know, after the South Florida game. And, you know, and the head coach has got to stand in there and kind of take all that stuff and just deflect all that stuff and protect his guys who he knows are doing a good job because he's with them in the football facility day in and day out. And he knows how hard they're working and he knows the plans they're putting together. And so, yeah, I mean, I think this guy has just done a great job of leading the program. We discussed, you know, several times, you know, how many more years this guy's got left in the tank. He's got a lot left in the tank. And yeah, this is one of the best jobs he's done.
Well, I said to my broadcast mates Saturday afternoon, I said, this team play anybody in the country. I mean, you bring on Oregon, bring on Georgia. Alabama's going to hang with them if not beat them. Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340 is our guest. We'll continue with him as we need to talk a little bit about what happened at Texas A&M over the weekend. And I've never heard of this happening before. Maybe you guys can enlighten me. This is Big Noon Sports.
It's time to spread. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Very pleasant afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, the high at 70. Tonight, increasingly cloudy, the low 49. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, the better chance of rain will be south of here, the high 65. Wednesday, cloudy and cool, periods of rain, the high 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is, and our guest, Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340. Guys, Sunday, we all get our Twitter feeds going, and next thing you know, Jimbo Fisher has been fired. That surprised me. I don't know about y'all, but it struck me, because I don't ever remember a coach being fired after a 51-10 victory. And I don't remember a coach also being fired on the other sideline. Have y'all ever seen a game where both coaches lost their job after the game? This is just crazy. We will get into the buyout a little bit later. But your thoughts, first of all, on Jimbo Fisher getting his wings clipped there at College Station.
Well, how does it feel if you're a Mississippi State football fan? I mean, that just kind of goes to show you how much a victory over Mississippi State means nowadays, right? I mean, you thump them and then, you know, you get fired. You know, the same thing happened to Gus, you know, after the 2020 season. He beat State and then he gets fired the next day. So, yeah, I mean, it didn't surprise me. To me, the clock's been ticking on Jimbo Fisher ever since this public feud he had with Nick Saban. You know, because buddy, if you're going to call out the best college football coach, you know, ever, you know, then you better follow it up with, you know, stepping on the gas and just driving your way to the front of the SEC West and getting them in some SEC championship games. And he did. You know, they just kind of plodded along and these are the athletic director's words, not mine. I mean, stuck in neutral. I mean, that's kind of where they've been. You haven't really gone anywhere. And so, you know, they had to make a move. You know, it wasn't going to get any better. hiring Bobby Petrino, obviously, you know, was not the answer. It didn't blow up like I thought it would 5 weeks into the year, but you know, it didn't work. So, you know, they're swallowing, you know, $76.8 million in buyout money. And not only that, but, you know, they got to spend about $80 million to get another coach. They got to pay his staff. This is going to wind up being like a $225 million mistake, you know, that Texas A&M made.
Yeah, and I think the timing of it has to do with this new era of college football that we're in, and that is the transfer portal opens the Monday after the FBS conference championship games. And so I think A&M is thinking smartly, hey, if we know we're going to move on, we should move on now and try to figure out what the plan is moving forward, and then give the new coach, presumably you have him in place at least a couple weeks before that window opens, so he is able to re-recruit all the guys that are thinking about going into the transfer portal. I mean, and I think that's the exact reason why Mississippi State fired Arnett, is because the athletic directors are, again, they're trying to navigate this new world of the transfer portal. And to me, it made sense for Bjork, who I really respect. I think he's a great AD, just to finally cut bait. But again, Jeff, do you agree with my assessment here? And, it does seem odd to fire a coach after a big win, but I think he's just being practical and prudent.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead on. I think, you know, the days of waiting till the year's over, you know, to decide what you're going to do are long gone. I mean, you're right. This process has been accelerated and I don't know. I thought several weeks ago that Jimbo Fisher was, you know, kind of on his last legs, and because, you know, like we said, the program just, you know, wasn't making any progress and wasn't really going anywhere. And so, I don't know. I feel like Texas A&M, when you make a move like that also, I mean, you have a guy in mind who you're going to get. And most people think it's going to be Elko at Duke. And that will probably be a good choice. He's done a good job with the Blue Devils and he's coached at A&M before. So, they've got a great idea. When you make a move like that, you're going to act quickly. And I think the wheels were in motion before this official announcement was made, for sure.
You know, I understand the timing of these announcements, but I still don't like it. I don't even like it when the coach resigns on his own, like Spurrier did a few years ago. It's just, to me, it's a bad look for the entire sport. But the sport has made this an issue, and now the teams are, you know, they're going to fire the coaches with 3 or 4 games left in the season. Again, my little statement there is still troubling to me. What about, I've been hearing other names in addition to Elko, Lanning, Meyer, is Urban Meyer ever going to coach again? And that would be a wicked fit.
Yeah, no, he's never going to coach again, and nor should he. Nor should any university hire this guy. I think Lanning is perfectly fine in Oregon. I think he's really building something special out there. I don't think, you know, he wants to come back, you know, into the SEC. So I don't think that's an option. Like I said, I think it's probably going to be, you know, making the move from Duke over there, and that's probably the best choice. And I mean, that's kind of already been decided. I'm kind of looking at the Mississippi State job. I'm very intrigued by who's going to step into that. And one of the first names that I saw come up was Dan Mullen. And, you know, I don't know if you can ever go home again, as they say, whether that's going to work when he goes back to state. But I'm very intrigued as to who they're going to hire over in Starkville as well. And there are a lot of guys who who are ready to step up to that next level. And another guy I saw on that list was Rhett Lashley, you know, who's doing a pretty good job at SMU. And so I'm very interested to see who gets that job.
I think you're spot on about Elko. And I think there's already been a, you know, kind of a handshake deal. I just think, Jeff, you're 100% right. Isn't it pretty remarkable? Go back to the spring of 2022. And that was when Jimbo and Nick were having this verbal sparring going back and forth, back and forth. And two people who we know very well got a massive book deal out of Nick Saban versus Jimbo Fisher. And this is going to be the league's big new rivalry. And Jimbo, alas, didn't even last two seasons after that public feud with the great one, Nick Saban, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, his really only moment. I think Jimbo has had two incredible moments in his career. He's had the national championship win at Florida State when, you know, Jameis Winston, and we use this cliche over and over again, but I don't know. I mean, generational talent at quarterback. And he was a special player. He was also a handful, you know, to coach and to manage.
Yeah,
a knucklehead. And here's where I fell out of love with Jimbo Fisher about how he handled all that stuff. He let Jameis run the team. And that's where where Jimbo lost me, you know. So it didn't surprise me that while he went to Texas A&M, and he had his one shining moment, to borrow a phrase from the NCAA basketball tournament, the walk-off win over Alabama. That was it. I mean, there's been nothing else, you know, that he can really hang his hat on, except for the 9-1 year during the pandemic. And, you know, that's it.
Our guest, ABC 3340's Jeff Spiegel. You want to just give us a quick touch on Auburn? They seem to be improving just since the last couple of three games. They've won three in a row now, haven't they?
They have, yeah. And, you know, to hear Hugh Freeze tell it, it's all about him coming in and kind of pounding his fist on the desk and saying, you know, this is what we're going to do with the offense. How he's kind of stepped in and helped Phillip Montgomery, you know, call the plays. And they've won three games in a row. And look, you can talk about, you know, how they beat up on the worst teams in the league all you want, but they're looking better. They're gaining confidence. I think the defense has played pretty doggone well, you know, for most of the year. You know, McLeod is just a terror back there in terms of an edge rusher, and they're doing a lot of really cool things. And look, when you get to the Iron Bowl and that thing's being played with Jordan-Hare, holy smokes. I mean, buckle up, because that game could get pretty crazy in Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, like 10 years ago. We'll go into that next week. Jeff, as always, tell everybody what you're doing this week. They can watch you tonight, or I guess Monday's your day off, I think. But anyway, what's going on at 3340?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking to the second round of the playoffs on Friday, and then another big college football weekend, and then the Zone Sunday night at 10:35. Appreciate you guys, and have a great day.
Thank you, Jeff. You too.
Thank you, Jeff. Great stuff.
As always, he is a go-to guy. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, back with Cole Thompson, who's going to join us from Texas, and he'll talk about the A&M deal with Jimbo Fisher out. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh spoke about his program today for the first time since his suspension.
It's got to be America's team. It's got to be America's team. America loves a team that beats the odds, beats the adversity, overcomes what the naysayers and, critics, so-called experts think. That's my favorite kind of team.
Harbaugh didn't comment on his situation, but did say he'll be speaking at Friday's hearing. In the NBA, ESPN reports Nuggets head coach Michael Malone has agreed to a contract extension. No details on the terms have been disclosed yet, but the report says Malone will become one of the league's highest paid coaches. In the NFL, ESPN reports there aren't any issues with Buccaneers quarterback Baker Mayfield's thumb. He's set to practice this week and be ready for Sunday's game against the 49ers. And the Dolphins designated running back Devon Achane to return from injured reserve.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
America's team.
Man, that guy Harbaugh, what a piece of work. Welcome back to the Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, Noah. Of course, Alabama beat Kentucky soundly, 49-21. Auburn with a big win over Arkansas, 48-10. And then Texas A&M beat the doors off Michigan, Mississippi State, 51-10. And then both coaches got fired. So we have a lot of different directions that we can turn here. At 1:15, we'll go to Texas to talk to Cole Thompson about the Aggies' former head coach. What went wrong? Lars, let's start there with just us because we haven't had a chance to talk about it in detail. What did go wrong?
You know, he just never was able to transform the or get the recruits that he got to play to their potential. Right. And it just goes back to coaching. And for whatever reason, they just couldn't get Texas A&M over the hump and to be an elite team year in and year out. Now, there was that one year that A&M finished, I think, number four. Five in the they were one slot away from getting into the college football playoffs, but you look at the recruiting success that Jimbo has had. His first full recruiting class was in 2019, and since then A&M has signed 70 of ESPN's 300 top players each year, and that's the fourth most in the FBS behind Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. And all three of those teams have each played in at least one national championship over that span. And also the Aggies were ranked, their recruiting class in 2022 was ranked number one overall. And Ross Bjork, late last night just said, something's not clicking in here. To provide confidence in the program, you have to adapt, you have to evolve. I'm not going to say whether he did or he didn't, but it didn't work. Well, clearly he's saying that he didn't evolve. Now his tenure at A&M ends with a 45-25 record. No appearances in the SEC championship game. And when you get a contract as absolutely ginormous as he got, the expectations are as equally high, and he just was never able to meet them. And Bjork, the athletic director, He met with Jimbo on Sunday morning at Kyle Field just before 9, and apparently it was a very brief meeting, and just told him that they're making an immediate change, and said Ross characterized, or Bjork characterized the conversation as cordial. Yeah, and but the thing is, they the Board of Regents met Thursday, and most of the 4-hour meeting was discussing Jimbo's future, and Bjork characterized the conversation as robust, but then, you know, he said, hey, this was my decision, to the president, and to the president and the chancellor there, John Sharp, and they decided that they were going to move on. But and now it's going to cost the school more than $76 million to buy out his contract, and that is nearly triple the highest known previous coaching buyout at a public university. According to the contract, Jimbo is owed $19.2 million within 60 days, right? So he gets 19.2 within 60 days, and then annually, Matt, annually, and this was to fail, he gets $7.2 million through 2031. And there's no offset to those, or mitigation on those payments. And and the first payment starts, like I said, 120 days after the annual payments start, 120 days after termination. So he'll get 19.2 within 2 months, and then within 4 months, the $7.2 million kicks in per year through 2031.
Yep, even the math works out there. Jimbo was 45-25 overall in his tenure with the Aggies. He was 27-21 in league play. Now, that one's pretty telling. You were talking about the year they finished fifth. They did in the college football like playoff rankings for that year. It's 2020, though, so that was a COVID year, right? They went to the Orange Bowl, won, so they had their highest finish under Fisher at Texas A&M, where they finished fourth. But, and I could go on and on about his failings. He never won the West. He finished second a couple times. Then he finished third, fourth, and sixth. No telling where he's going to drop this year, but it's middle of the pack or lower. So he didn't do his job. And I think the statement is that we're stuck in neutral is pretty apropos. So will he coach again? I don't, Lars, I guess I'm just maybe too materialistic. But if I was going to get, first of all, I've been paid how much? 20, 30 million? I've probably got that socked away in the ranch, but 19 million, then 7 million a year for 8 years. I don't know if I'm just going to ride off into the sunset.
I think he will coach again. I believe you have somewhat of a personal relationship with Jimbo, and I remember
when he was the quarterback at Samford.
I've had some personal interaction with him over the years, and I've always liked him. He's sort of different in person than he is when he's in front of the camera. He certainly has made some mistakes. Engaging Nick Saban in a war of words is never a good idea. But just your personal feelings about Jimbo.
Well, I liked him when he was at Samford. By the way, he was a heck of a lower division college quarterback. I mean, had he been a little bit higher, I don't know, a little bit taller, whatever. But he has an all shucks appeal to him. But I think it's more obvious when you're around him in person. And he really is kind of a country guy, even though what he's from West Virginia, same state as Nick Saban. So I probably wouldn't coach again, but these guys have a different level and in which they live. So he will probably coach again. As to where, I don't know, but it appears to me there's going to be a lot of places that need coaches.
Jimmy Sexton, once again, the big winner. What an agent.
Yeah, no kidding.
No. And he gets what, 3%?
I think
3% of
same,
that.
Same as the real estate agent. I think.
Is that right?
I don't. Hey, we'll be back with Cole Thompson is going to talk about the Aggies when we return on Big Noon Sports.
.9 Tuscaloosa weather. Very pleasant afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, the high at 70. Tonight, increasingly cloudy, the low 49. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, the better chance of rain will be south of here, the high 65. Wednesday, cloudy and cool, periods of rain, the high 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, you just heard it from James Spann. It is an absolutely gorgeous day. Near 70 and sunny. Got some rain over the weekend. It was kind of a dreary weekend, but nonetheless, we needed it. It's Lars, Matt, and Noah with you on this Monday afternoon. We're talking about, what a weekend. I mean, Alabama, convincing victory over Kentucky. Then we got the news Sunday morning about Jimbo Fisher. And then you just heard Jim Harbaugh a minute ago proclaim that the Wolverines should be America's team. So with that in mind, Cole Thompson, I'll start with what's happening in your area. That's the dismissal of Jimbo Fisher. This didn't seem to take anybody by real surprise. Did it you?
Hey, guys. Yes and no. I would say that that's probably the best way you put it, because not many coaches find a way to win convincingly by 41 points against a coach who was later fired on Monday morning in Zach Arnett and then be shown the door less than 12 hours later. So according to my people that I spoke to yesterday, Fisher got a phone call after the game. He was pulled aside by athletic director Ross Bjork, saying that they were going to meet the next morning. That morning around 9 a.m., Fisher walked into Kyle Field. He had a conversation that was considered quick and cordial and told he was no longer going to be the head coach at Texas A&M. They are trying to move fast on finding their next head coach. And there are, of course, stipulations of what Ross Bjork, the athletic director, is looking for. But the main thing that he said yesterday was, this is a program that's stuck in neutral. This is a team that should be fighting for conference championships and national championships with the abundance of resources found in College Station. And unfortunately, if you're not moving forward, you're stuck. And this was a move to where you look back over the last 6 years of Jimbo Fisher's tenure. Wasn't negative, but certainly was nowhere near what the ultimate end goal was, especially when giving out a contract to a man who was supposed to be your savior, $9 million, which was at the time of his firing the sixth largest in college football in annual salary. There is just a lot of questions of this program and this regime. Why were these moves not made? What changed with this situation? Why not go out and add in a offensive coordinator and change up your persona and concept a few years prior? And ultimately, this factored into several major losses along the way, including two to Alabama, one in Bryant Denny Stadium, and then one here earlier this season, 26-20 final score. Fisher actually said right in his final press conference that A&M was 3 to 4 plays away from being a college football playoff contender. And to be completely frank, he's not wrong. But the problem is, this isn't 3 or 4 plays away in 2023. This is 3 or 4 plays away in 2022 and 2021 and 2019 and 2018 and 2023. So it's 5 years of similar mistakes being made. Now the program gets to wash itself clean. Elijah Robinson, who has been on staff since 2018, will take over as the interim coach. Both Bobby Petrino and DJ Durkin will stay on staff for the remainder of the year. A lot of positivity around the program when it comes to who is running the show for the next few games, including the bowl game. But this is, again, a financial disaster that is ultimately going to come back and bite Texas A&M right in the keister.
Do you think the timing of this was accelerated because of the transfer portal window reopening up on December 4th? And a big part of the new coach's job, presumably he'll be hired before then, will be to re-recruit the guys who are already there, because as we know, Texas A&M and under Jimbo has done a great job of putting together, stacking one great recruiting class after the next. And so, to prevent a mass exodus, don't you think, it is, prudent of Bjork to get a coach in place well before that December 4th deadline?
Yeah, that was part of it, Lars. The other part was also they want to make sure that they were able to keep recruits that were signed to their top 10 2024 recruiting class. That's another big deal, because early signing period is on December 20th, and this allows players now to reassess and reevaluate what they're looking for in a program and who they follow as a leader. So those were definite factors. Ross Bjork also said that the arrival of Oklahoma and Texas is another dividend with this, because not only are you going to see a cosmic shift when it comes to change in the forms of who runs what, but also these are now components and elements that are going to be playing against you when it comes to recruiting assets. I mean, Lars, let's just be real for a second. When it comes to the SEC, the brand name SEC alone lands several recruits, just based off of the recognition and the spotlight and the ambiance. And that's been something that Texas has been able to hold over Oklahoma's head and Texas's head for a very long time. But now that they don't have that at their disposal, this is all about winning on the recruiting trail, and it's all about winning and keeping players involved in the staff. Now, I've already talked to some players. They've made it abundantly clear that this is their final season at Texas A&M. The portal is going to open wide. But what's crazy is, the same thing was said about Washington's Kalen DeBoer. There were three receivers, two of which are going to be first-round or second-round picks in Roma Dunze and Jalen McMillan, who had entered the transfer portal after Jimmy Lake was fired. He was able to convince them to stay, buy into what he was selling underneath new OC Ryan Grubb. And look at the Huskies now. They're 10-0. They have a very good shot of being a college football playoff team, and they've got a Heisman Trophy quarterback worthy of, you know, honoration. That's probably going to be a first-round pick, too. So the move was definitely to keep as many players on staff as possible, but it was also to get ahead of the curve and let people know, listen, Jimbo, we appreciate what he's done, but this is now a borderline bloodbath when you look at the recruiting assets that are coming this way. We need to be able to develop talent as much as we can recruit it.
All right, who's next?
That is the million-dollar question. I think a lot of people are trying to figure out right now, guys. I will say the name Dan Lanning continues to pop up, even in circles that I'm close with, and for very good reason. The guy is a disciple of Nick Saban, and he is a disciple of Kirby Smart. He understands the SEC. He's got a great recruiting background defensively. I mean, I'm going to say this just real fast. Lars, when you look at Oregon's team, they are basically a Frankenstein monster. They got offensive linemen and defensive linemen that were meant to play in the Big Ten. They got running backs and linebackers that are supposed to be superstars in the SEC. And they got weapons on weapons that are all found throughout the Pac-12 and the ACC. Like, they just basically took every conference and said, here, let's throw it on Eugene and give them a lot of Nike money and figure it out. Like, that's what
they did. Hey, have you used that metaphor in print?
Have I? Yeah, of course I have.
All right, good job.
Brought on my own show before. No, they're a Frankenstein monster of madness that is absolutely phenomenal. And part of the thing is that they're fighting for a college football playoff berth. The crazy part is therein lies the problem. If you're trying to get ahead and land your next head coach, not only was Phil Knight smart enough this time around to put an amendment in the contract that now costs a $20 million buyout, but also, Lanning has to leave his team in the midst of potentially fighting for a national championship with a Heisman Trophy quarterback that I don't think a lot of people ever thought was going to come true in Bo Nix, with a quality offensive staff that is absolutely trending in the right direction. But he also is an SEC guy. He's been around the block forever. He understands that this is what works, and A&M just fired a coach for $76 million, and they're going to pay $150 million to get rid of an entire coaching staff. They're not afraid to spend money, so that's not the problem. Mike Elko at Duke is going to be a name that gets mentioned a lot because of his recruiting prowess in the SEC, his dominance as a defensive-minded coach, and also his relationship with the university during his time as A&M defense coordinator for 4 years. A wild card name that would make a lot of sense, and one that I'm actually really pulling for just from a fan perspective or from a national perspective, Jonathan Smith at Oregon State does not get enough respect at the national limelight. This is a guy who won a Cotton Bowl and brought Oregon State to a number five ranking underneath one of the legendary coaches back in the day, in Dennis Erickson. He then took over a program that watched its coach resign in Gary Anderson, and he now has the Beavers potentially playing for a Pac-12 title game, back-to-back 10-win seasons. And unlike everybody else who's kind of just like, oh, well, I'm in a major conference, they're the Pac-2. Like, it's him, Oregon State, Jake Dickert, and Washington State. They're trying to figure stuff out. Like, that is a great storyline. That is great for when you're trying to tell the tale. But I think that that's a name that I'll watch for as well, just because of the situation. One last name I'll throw out there just for, you know, fun and gigs. Lane Kiffin's not an option. However, I would not be shocked to see the close eye on Glenn Schumann, the defense coordinator at Georgia.
Cole, real quick, and we definitely want to hold you for a second segment. Your thoughts on Zach Arnett getting fired from Mississippi State and not even finishing year one on the job?
Zach Arnett was in a lose-lose situation from the jump. They really kept him around because they realized that he was morally correct because of his relationship with Mike Leach. It's a fresh start for him. It's a fresh start for the university. And if I have one phone call to make, I'm going right up the road to Troy, and I'm bringing in John Summerall. I think that is the perfect fit for what you need to start yourself.
Good stuff from Cole Thompson. And it will continue on the other side of this break if you listen to Big Noon Sports.
The best
person is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tied as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
It is Big Noon Sports. Our guest is Cole Thompson. Cole, tell everybody as we lead into the answer to this question where people can read and listen to you, and then just go ahead and follow up with this. Can Alabama play with anybody in the nation?
Yes, if you want to give me a follow on Twitter, I am a proud Alabama graduate, so all of you out there, roll tide, shameless plug, at Mr. Cole Thompson. You want to follow my work on YouTube, where I talk exclusively college football and only college football, it's at Mr. Cole Thompson. So the exact same as my Twitter handle. I just came out with a video talking about this subject roughly about 24 hours ago. You can read my work at fannation.com, and you can always listen to my radio show, Just Saying It, on the Sports Map Radio Network. We do live streams on YouTube, of course, but also you can download the Sports Map Radio app, carry this in your pocket, or you can listen on podcast form wherever you get the podcast listening systems. Now, Alabama. Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, they can. They really can, guys. And here's the reason why. Because Lane Kiffin, I mean, not Lane Kiffin, my apologies, but maybe Lane Kiffin at the same time, but that's a question for another day. Nick Saban is a crocodile, and what I mean by that is, do you realize that crocodiles have been on this earth as long as the dinosaurs, yet somehow they were able to adapt and survive and find a way to still be on this planet in 2023? That's Nick Saban, basically. The man just does not know how to quit and go extinct. think. And he's always willing to make changes, which is one of the biggest blessings to a university like Alabama. Even when there are switches to his offense or defense, or he has to hire or fire a new coordinator, the mission is still the same. But the thing that really stands out is after the South Florida game, when you go back and you watch how Jalen Milroe took over this offense, it wasn't just his confidence knowing that he was the best quarterback in the room. It was Tommy Reese and it was Nick Saban sitting down and saying, we have four at us as our quarterback. We need 6 points nearly every drive. Let's stop trying to play him like we would a Jalen Hurts or a Tua Tagovailoa or a Mac Jones. Let's play Milroe-style football and the rest will see fit. And slowly but surely, as the confidence continued to rise from the ashes that was that Texas dismay of a loss, so did the personal play. You watch as now they utilize his legs and they have more quarterback run design. You watch as they're allowing him to extend plays outside the pocket, but also sit back, wait for a receiver to get open downfield. And instead of doing dink and dunks, he's finding receivers 17, 18, 22 yards, and they are connecting, thus building chemistry. Tyrion Arnold right now might be the most underappreciated defensive back in the country. After that Texas game, I was a little concerned. But then you see the way that he has kind of turned the corner. He may actually be Alabama's quote-unquote best corner because of the way that he's been able to blanket and mitigate receivers. And really outside of that second quarter against LSU, this defense has kept everything in front of them, which I think is a major advantage towards any team, I mean, to their stock. That's a big testament to Kevin Steele. I think that when Kevin Steele was named the head, I mean, the defense coordinator, it didn't really settle well with fans, but this was a guy who had been around the block for over four decades in coaching, and he understood what team is about. Not great players on a team, but team mentality. And that's why you see Dallas Turner playing at an elite level, and Chris Braswell, and Kool-Aid McKinstry, and Caleb Downs as a freshman. This is an offense that right now has hitched its wagon to whatever Jalen Milroe wants. In his last two games, he has 10 touchdowns against two interceptions. He's completing over 71% of his throws. Not to mention, once again, this defense ranks top 10 against the run. It ranks top 15 scoring. It's one of the best on third down getting off the field. They're legit. They are playing exceptionally up to their standard. And that's the crazy part, is it still might not even be up to Nick's standard. But if they continue on this pathway, there is a legit shot that not only do they run Georgia out of the building, but they run their way all the way to Houston to go see another national title.
Wow, that's saying something, running Georgia out of the building based on how Georgia played last week. A lot of people think it's sort of Georgia and everybody else. But, all right, let's stay on Alabama. Cole, you played the game. You spend a lot of time watching tape, especially, you know, you do such a great job pre-draft of analyzing where players could go, their strengths, their weaknesses. So two questions. One, what have you seen from the evolution just in the past, like, 6, 7, 8 weeks of left tackle Caden Proctor at Alabama? And two, this is the ultimate cart before horse question. Is Jalen Milroe going to play quarterback in the NFL?
Let's go with the second part first and work our way backwards. I think that when the main thing is with Jalen Milroe, he still has another year to figure things out, which is a huge blessing for him because there are some things that NFL scouts salivate over. The pocket awareness to be able to evade a sack, the ability to run a option formation, and the ability to win in the open field based off of pure strength. But there are some things that scouts are going to want to see, just like they did with Jalen Hurts when he transferred from Alabama to Oklahoma, but in a little different variety. With Milroe, it's going to be building that harmonious connection across the middle of the field on those short to intermediate passes, not just trying to go to a Kobe Pretense or a Jermaine Burton or an Amari Nick Black. They want to be able to see probably where he wins with timing and anticipation and those little tidbits that truly stand out that make a quarterback like C.J. Stroud almost irreplaceable, a quarterback like Josh Allen, a haymaker in the open field. Those are things that he's going to have to work on. He could. I think that he will at least get a shot. they may end up switching him at some point. Logan Thomas began his career after he left Virginia Tech and then switched to tight end within 3 years. It could be that situation, but right now there's no reason to say he can't play quarterback. Caden Proctor's footwork has gotten a lot better. I think that's the main thing I take away. You're watching him not lunge anymore. He's done a great job of having a stout lower frame that allows him to plant his foot into the ground and then basically take the offensive, the defensive lineman toward the outside gap, thus opening up not only a running lane, but also a passing lane for Jalen Milroe. I think he's allowed 3 pressures in his last 4 games, 1 sack, if I'm not mistaken, since the Texas A&M game. So you've watched him, hand placement's gotten better, footwork has gotten better. I think more than anything, his center of gravity is doing a lot of the heavy lifting, because if you're not watching him lean too much one way or another, he's not back on his heels, which is something that a lot of young offensive linemen do, or he's not lunging towards getting the defensive linemen, which allows them to get hands, pull down, and work up field, thus basically taking the tackle out of the play. And you see this with NFL offensive linemen all the time. So it's not that he's 18, it's that he's going up against more top-tier competition. Proctor, I think, is going to be a very solid offensive lineman for the foreseeable future, even if there were some growing pains. And I think that's a huge testament to where this offensive line has gone from. Because at the beginning of the year, they, as much as Milroe was struggling to build a connection with receivers, he also was struggling to have that time and temperament to stay in the pocket and watch plays unravel, where he doesn't have that now. Now you're seeing him and the offensive line be one sound mindset and body.
Cole, one more, we'll let you go. Jim Harbaugh suspended for the game this past Saturday. He came on today and said that Michigan was America's team. Rather interesting quote. Is this it? Will they just take the suspension throughout the rest of the year, or are we going to be continuing to hear about Michigan and signal stealing gate or whatever it is? SSS, I think Lars termed it, as signal stealing scandal. What's going on in Michigan?
So the Triple S is still going to be alive and well for the next couple of weeks. There you go, Lars. I coined it for you. Better, even quicker. But anyways, the thing that we have to look at with Harbaugh and the America's team, Grill, I'll end with you on a different note. But with Harbaugh, the problem isn't that he got caught with his program stealing signs. You know, if you watch all 22 and you're able to catch something on the side track, you probably can utilize that to your advantage. It's the problem of him once again going out of his way and trying to pull the wool over the NCAA's eyes and really the fans' eyes by saying right now, oh, I didn't know anything about it. And yes, I do believe Bill Pogge, the Charlotte head coach, when he comes and says, yes, Harbaugh is a busy man. Yes, Harbaugh understands that there is a lot of things going on outside of his realm. And most of the time, he's waiting for things to unravel as information is quickly unfolding. But you can't have a recruiting analyst dress up for Halloween against Central Michigan and find a way to say, oh, I had no idea about that. When they played on a Friday night, it was right up the road. So I don't really buy that one. They're going to fight this. According to Santa Ono, who has come out with a statement, they are dismayed at the decision made by Tony Petitti to react to the news as quickly as possible. But what I will say is that even at this point, the way that this team is played, and the way the team played against a very solid Penn State defensive front led by Manny Diaz, do you really need Jim Harbaugh at this point? Sherrone Moore has been a coach in waiting for a while. There's rumors that he has already been linked to Michigan State and several other openings across the country. There's also been the factor of this is a game where they went away from the passing attack. Like, J.J. McCarthy, a lot of people are going to say, is overrated. No, they just didn't need to dial up their bag of tricks and have them throw it a million times. This was basically a let's play Harbaugh football in memory of Jim Harbaugh and pound it into oblivion until we get this defensive line tired, and then boom, 30-yard touchdown run by Donovan Edwards, and boom, 25-yard touchdown run by Blake Corum. And that's really where you are with this team. They're going to be fine with or without Harbaugh. He will be back if they make it to the playoffs, and there is a very good shot that if they play the way that they did against Ohio State and Maryland to close out the year, they will be in the playoffs. But as for America's team, gentlemen, I think we all can agree who America's team is. It is the James Madison Dukes because that university is still undefeated. They have played exceptional football, and the NCAA is bending them over a barrel and not allowing them to be bowl eligible. I speak for all of college football lore when I say the Dukes deserve bowl eligibility. How dare we keep them out of the conversation? Kirk Cignetti's done a phenomenal job. Kirk Cignetti, a former Nick Saban disciple, I might add in. That is America's team. Get the Dukes bowl eligible. And that's how we end the cycle, people.
Well, hold on. I got one more question for you.
I love
Triple S. You know, the student always trying to outdo the teacher, but the teacher is always proud of the student when he does. So well done. Okay, you covered the Houston Texans. I was watching the Bengals Texans game on Sunday yesterday.
Yeah, sorry about that, buddy.
With a buddy of mine, and he looked at me about in the third quarter and said, I'd take C.J. Stroud over Joe Burrow. I about dropped my adult beverage. Your thoughts on C.J. Stroud?
He's special. I mean, I don't think there's any denying that. I think it's the hype of him being the quarterback to take moving forward is a little far-fetched. So I understand why you decide to drop your adult beverage or John Daly or whatever we call these drinks today. I'm not sure what you partake in or peruse with on your Sundays. But what I will say is anticipation is at a veteran level. His footwork is mechanically about as swift as you could ever ask for. He's doing this with wide receivers that were afterthoughts or day two selections. So it's not like he has a Jamar Chase at his disposal or anyone near that level of talent. And the ability for him to read and react against the defensive line, knowing what his offense provides for him, is another staple. I do not believe he is a top five quarterback in the NFL this year. I do not believe that he's even a top 10 quarterback at the end of the year. But he is a top five consideration for MVP. He is the offensive rookie of the year. And if he continues this up next season, there is an argument that you would take him over Joe Burrow and almost every quarterback besides Pat Mahomes.
Cole, thank you. Appreciate your time, and you're right, exactly right about James Madison. Cool, man.
I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, brother.
We'll be back and wrap up this Monday edition of Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Very pleasant afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, the high at 70. Tonight, increasingly cloudy, the low 49. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, the better chance of rain will be south of here, the high 65. Wednesday, cloudy and cool, periods of rain, the high 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Big Noon Sports, thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon, man. It's pretty. Next weekend, next Saturday, I should say, Alabama takes on UTC at 11 o'clock. They have announced the Alabama-Auburn kickoff time. That will be at 2:30. That's a big deal. This is becoming more and more a big deal, and now it's because Brian Kelly won't let it go. He has said publicly that Dallas Turner tried to take out Jaden Daniels with that rough and the passer hit that he had, that the SEC countered by saying, after they looked at the video, it indeed was not targeting. I've always liked and respected Brian Kelly, and I still do, but I think he is way out of bounds on making this statement, and I don't know why, who it benefits.
Yeah, you know, he was frustrated because one of his players determined to have targeted a guy and was taken out of the game, and the Dallas Turner hit that he put on Daniels and knocked him out for a play, but he returned to action. But there was a lot of controversy on social media. But then if you really look at it, Dallas Turner did not lead with the crown of his helmet, nor did he launch himself into Daniels. It was a clean play. And, you know, Kelly just, he's upset about it. And it's weird that he brought it up after LSU beat Florida, right? And yeah, I get it. One of his defensive players got ejected for targeting. And, you know, he told reporters that the hit was clean, and he kept using the word tragic. that he got ejected. Okay, this is one of my pet peeves. Big time pet peeves as a writer. You know what's tragic? 9/11 was tragic. Yeah. When a young person passes away, that's tragic. A guy getting kicked out of a football game, that's not tragic.
I agree 155,000,000%. I hate it when coaches do that. Or, and I'm not just singling out coaches. Other walks of life do it as well.
Yeah. But, you know, Dallas Turner did get flagged for a 15-yard personal foul. So it wasn't like Alabama didn't get penalized. And you go back to 2022 against Tennessee. Bryce Young suffered a far worse hit, and the officials let the play stand, and nothing was called. And, you know, so I don't know. This is just going to add more fuel to next year's LSU-Alabama game, because you know it will be brought up because Brian Kelly can't let it go. He seems to think that if you use sort of deductive logic here, that hit by Dallas Turner changed the entire course of the game. And if it hadn't happened, maybe LSU would have won.
Yeah, but then after the game, he came forward and said Alabama beat him. And I liked that about him, but you can certainly tell one thing. It's bothering the hell out of him.
Yeah, he has not let that go.
He brings it up after a win against one of their biggest rivals, and that's Florida. And then he goes on and on about it, and then he uses improper terminology to describe it, so... I guess he's back to dancing with the fight with the tight end. I don't know. All right. Our thanks to Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340 and Cole Thompson for joining us on the show. Mike Rodak will be on from Bama 24/7 tomorrow. And Lars, we'll say good afternoon. And then also to you as well, Noah. You folks have a wonderful day.
Have a good one, everybody.